the manufacturers that whose tomatoes we picked and cucumbers we picked. How do we compel them to sit down and talk to us poor people who have nothing? And the response was that when you impede the rich man's ability to make money, anything is negotiable. So every campaign that we do is focused on trying to figure out what is the leverage there.
Baltimore Velasquez, for both Republicans and Democrats, the Latino voter is the prize. This is the first time you're a delegate inside, as well as protesting outside. What message do you have for President Obama?
I think that we like fighters. We want him to use his presidency more as a bully pulpit. I mean, they're trying to deny him anything so he can't take credit for anything to get Mr. Romney in office. Mr. Romney, the candidate of self-deportation, rollback some of the gains that we've made with the Dream students. And so that's the option that we have. Are you serious? We have to do whatever we can to galvanize our Latino population. Our Latinos in Ohio are now about 5% of the voting population, and it's imperative that we use these issues to tell them how significant this election is for us as Latinos. So we're hoping that we're going to be able
to... How are you organizing farm workers?
Pardon?
How are you organizing people to vote?
Well, see, we work with the established Latino population who live in Ohio, because most of them were former farm workers, and so some of them were members of our union back in the 70s and 80s, and now they're residents in Ohio. So we're reaching out to those people and organizing in their neighborhoods.
Well, Baltimore Velasquez, I want to thank you very much for joining us. Baltimore Velasquez is president of the Farm Labor Organizing Committee, or FLOC, with the AFL-CIO. Also here as an Ohio delegate at the Democratic National Convention, a delegate inside for the first time. And that does it for our broadcast. We're broadcasting 2 hours every day. If you're station is only broadcasting one, you can go to our website at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Amal Kalkani Masood, Robbie Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Martinez Durista, Nima Allen. Special thanks to Julie Crosby, Becca Staley, Miguel Nogueira, Dennis Moynihan, John Hamilton, and all the crew here at the People's Space in Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now!
This is your WUSB concert billboard for Tuesday, September 4th. Odd Future will be at the Paramount in Huntington, 8:30. The Wee Trio will be at Cornelia Street Cafe in Manhattan. Live Art Fusion with the Ken Talv Trio will be at the Oyster Bay Street Fair, front of the Maritime Music, Oyster Bay, 6 p.m. Your concert billboard for Wednesday, September 5th. Wondrous Stories will be at KJ Farrell's in Belmore. Il Volo will be at the NYCB Theater in Westbury, 7 p.m. Wednesday and Friday.
This has been your concert billboard for this week. Tune in to WUSB each day to hear more about your favorite performers and where they're playing. Or go to the online concert billboard at WUSB.FM, which has a schedule for upcoming months so you can plan ahead. Concert Billboard is a service of WUSB Stony Brook, 90.1 FM.
And the time is 6 o'clock. How'd that happen? And you're listening to radio station WUSB Stony Brook. It's time, once again, for Off the Wall. We'll be right back. Very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, where we seem to have more time than normal. Democracy Now! Ended a little early. Concert Billboard was short. I guess we'll just take advantage of it all. Yes, indeed. It's 3 minutes after six. Usually we're just getting the intro started at this point, but, why not? Why not continue and see how much we can cram into an hour? We'll be taking phone calls at some point. We have our delay system actually working today. 631-632-9872. 631-632-WUSB. That's the number not to call now, because I'm not taking calls now. I'll take them later. I'm going to ramble a bit, talk about various things going on in the news. Yeah, we're going to be focusing on the Democratic convention taking place right now in North Carolina. Apparently, somehow, my suggestion last week has now become the way things are. I said, you know, you guys could lob off a day from the convention easily, like the Republicans were forced to do when the hand of God said, you guys aren't going to do anything on Monday because I'm sending a hurricane your way. Well, it turns out the Democrats, they had Labor Day sent their way. I guess it would be in bad. How is it in bad taste to have a convention on Labor Day? I don't know, but it probably would have been in bad taste somehow. They decided not to have anything on Monday. So I think what's going to happen now is that they're only going to be three-day conventions. When I was a kid, I could swear they were 5 days. Then again, they seemed like they lasted forever. But they've been 4 days, and now I think we won't have Mondays anymore. That's pretty much going to be the end. And yeah, I'm all for it, by all means. Some things can be streamlined, and I think political conventions are one thing that certainly can be. You don't hear about this in any other country. You know, you hear about an election called in some other country, and 3 days later they have the election, and then 2 days later the government topples, and basically everyone has a lot of fun. Here, it's basically years and years of campaigning, and then you have these conventions, and the other side has the conventions, and there's no third side or fourth side or anything like that, and the whole world pays attention. And, you know, I think if we just stop doing that, maybe it might evolve to something a little bit more meaningful. I don't know. But that's a story right now from Charlotte. Michelle Obama's giving a speech tonight. Should be a nice feel-good type of an evening. And various other things, I'm sure, are going to be happening as well. Fidel Castro's giving the keynote? Is that true? San Antonio Mayor Julian Castro. Okay. All right. I just saw Castro to give keynote at Democratic convention. And that got sent to me in the Republican emergency email alert you got to take action right away. Okay. So it's a different Castro. But, you know, he's probably related. He's probably got. And Julian is his first name, too. So he's in with Julian Assange and Fidel Castro mixed together. Need I say more? No, I don't think I need to. This is exciting news. Has nothing to do with politics at all. It's more important than anything that politics could ever bring us. Amateur cave explorers have found a new family of spiders in southern Oregon, and scientists have dubbed them Troglaraptor. Oh my goodness, Troglaraptor, the name itself is a bit scary. And that means cave robber. How does that mean cave robber? Troglodyte. I mean, I know what raptor means. I don't think it means cave robber. Basically, they have fearsome front claws. Yes, spiders with claws. It's sort of like, I guess, a mixture of a crab and a spider. The spelunkers sent specimens to the California Academy of Sciences in San Francisco, which has the West Coast's largest collection of spiders. I have the largest collection on the East Coast of spiders, and I say that because at my house, for some reason, spiders feel very welcome. Well, I guess because I don't kill them. Spiders take care of all kinds of things that I'd rather not deal with, and you very rarely see insects running around inside anyway. You see a whole lot of them outside, but you don't see them inside, and that's because, you know, these massive spiders that really freak people out, that people literally scream when they see them. Yeah, they're as big as your hand. Okay, so what? You know, just because they're bigger doesn't make them more scary. But they basically handle any insects that happen to wander inside, and we leave each other alone. They're not interested in any of my affairs. I'm not really interested in their affairs. And it's kind of a cool thing. It's nice to see nature working, you know, and not to interfere with it. And I think, you know, if we did that a little bit more, we'd live in a better world. So anyway, I've got, spiders running around, taking care of things. There's this massive spider web outside, which I'm just admiring every day. It's been there for a week now. And this guy really, he set himself up in a very good location, right by a light that goes on every now and then. So all the moths come in, and they just fly right into the web, and he's busy all night processing them. So that's just something to see how quickly these things are constructed, how perfect it all is. You know, the symmetry of a spider web is just simply amazing. And of course, you got a big massive spider sitting in the middle of it, just sort of camped out, waiting. And it's fascinating to watch. You know, you don't have to go to a cave in Oregon to see this. You can just go outside and look. Or sometimes they come inside and give you a little show. I did have some insect issues. In the form of ants. I say did because, well, it seems to have been dealt with one way or another. I find it amazing, though, what I was witnessing. I mean, there were ants, and they were a different kind of ant. I'm used to two kinds. I'm used to the small kind, and we see those in the spring. I think, at least I see them more in the spring. Very small, they move very slowly, and then later on in the year, you see the big black ones that move very fast. They're the carpenter ants. And they mostly climb up on trees, and they don't really seem to be as organized as the small ones. But then I saw another kind of ant I had never seen before. And I noticed them because they had gathered at the cat food dish. I took a look one day, and I said, oh, my God, those are ants. Those are ants by the cat food, and they saw me, and this is something I've never seen ants do before. They all froze. There were about five of them. They all stopped moving. And that's not true of the black carpenter ants. It's not true of the little ones. But these guys, they just all of them simultaneously stopped. And then when I moved in, they all ran really quickly, in all different directions too. They kind of scattered. I don't know what kind of ant this is. If anyone can help me out here, I'd really be curious. I've looked up many different species, and there are so many kinds of ants alone. And the closest thing I could find, and I'm not kidding, I'm not making this up, the closest thing I could find was a species known as crazy ants. And it's because they run around in all different directions, I guess to confuse you or something. But I think there's something else going on here. I think there is some kind of intelligence. I've looked up ant culture. And maybe that's the wrong word to use, but I've looked up what ants do. They have all kinds of complex mechanisms inside their colonies. They recycle air. They dispose of waste. They communicate with each other. They recognize each other. They can give directions and things like that. The other day, maybe about a week and a half ago, and this was after I had to take matters into my own hands and do a little bit of spraying. Not very much spraying. I hate spraying. I try never to do it. But I noticed that they had discovered the kitchen. And by that, I mean, I just saw maybe I came down one day and there were about four or five of them in different places. So I knew they were kind of scouting it out. There was nothing open, nothing for them to actually take part in. But it disturbed me that they were there. So I said, OK, that's it. Spiders aren't pulling their weight here, so I have to do a one-day spray-a-thon. And that pretty much did the trick, but about a week after that, I happened to notice on one of the counters, in fact, the counter where the cat food is stored, that there were two of these ants, two of them, just sort of milling around, like a scouting party of some sort. And they both froze again when they saw me in that way of theirs. And I went into the other room to get a Tupperware container, because I had a plan. And I came back, they were still frozen in that position. And again, this is something totally alien to me, that they would do this. They were in that position, both of them at the same time. They both know to do this. And I snuck up and put the Tupperware container over the two of them. Yeah, and they were captured inside the Tupperware. Well, actually, they were still on the counter, but they had the Tupperware container over them. And they basically had nowhere to go. They sculpted out. They went around in circles a few times, saw where the boundaries are, or were on the container. And I think they pretty much got a sense as to what was going on. I checked in a couple. I was trying to figure out what to do. I wanted to either take pictures of them or try and figure out what kind of ant this was, take a closer look, figure out a way to get them actually in a container. And basically, what happened was a couple of hours later, I came down and to check on them, and there was another ant on the outside looking in. They hadn't turned up, so they sent somebody to look for them. Or something like that. But this ant knew that they were inside that container. They're on the other side. It was the strangest thing. But in my mind, I was thinking, oh boy, there's ants all over the place. I got to deal with this. So basically, I decided that this was the time I was going to basically move the container over a container top and try and seal it and seal the two of them in. Of course, as soon as I moved, the other one froze, and then he basically just stayed there trying to figure out what I was going to do next. The operation didn't go quite as planned. I slid the container over to the edge of the counter, had the top of the container there ready to basically capture the two ants, but they split up inside the container. One escaped, and one was captured. It was almost like a plan. Oh, and I should point out, too, when I moved in for this final operation, the two of them were in the middle, underneath the container. They were in the middle, and they were both standing up, leaning against each other. It was like meditation or prayer or something. Maybe it was mating. I don't know. Strange time to do that, though. But it was, I'd never seen ants doing that. They weren't moving. They were just, it was very weird a scene. Anyway, one escaped. The search party also escaped. So two of them went away someplace. I could never find them after that. And then I had the other one in the container. I was able to study him for a while. And there's really, there's not much I can say. He wasn't totally black. He was blackish. He was about the size of a carpenter ant. He had seemed like longer legs, moved a lot faster. And this was not like anything I had seen before. And then I decided, okay, I've seen enough of this. And I let him go outside and figured maybe he can reconnect with his friends or make friends with other ants. But, they don't do that. They don't make friends with other ants. The colonies know each other. And I was wondering about this. If you take an ant and you move it, say, to China, he's going to be very confused. And the Chinese ants are not going to accept him. And it's going to be a very unpleasant time. So they really understand all of that. They have wars. If you ever see a crowd of ants on the ground, like a whole batch of them, they're either on top of a sugar cube or they're having a war. And they're the only species that does this, has organized wars. And, I was reading a lot about them. Apparently, I don't know how true this is, but apparently they have battles with individuals. In other words, there's like a champion of the whole crowd of ants, and he battles the champion of the other crowd of ants. It sounds bizarre, but I read it on the internet, so I don't know. It might be true. So anyway, the weird thing is, I let this guy go outside. I don't like to kill even insects unless I absolutely have to. I just don't see that. When I was a kid, I did it a lot, but I just don't see the point of it. It doesn't feel good to squish something that's alive. Well, unless it's a fruit or something like that. But I mean, you know, an animal or an insect or anything like that, unless it's hurting you or a danger of some sort, if it's not necessary, then I much prefer to let them go outside and live their lives and hopefully become better for it. But the thing is, after doing that, these guys never came back. I didn't have to spray, didn't have to do anything. They got the message. And that was a couple of weeks ago. They have not been back since. Very weird. Very weird behavior on the part of insects. So there's something going on with ants that you don't see in beetles. You don't see them in worms or caterpillars or things like that. You might see it in bees, but I don't really hang out with them very much. But there's I would like to know what that other species is. I've never seen that before here on Long Island. I know throughout the United States and throughout the world, which is where our audience is, there are all kinds of different ants. And I've seen pictures of them on the net, and it's just really amazing how many different species there are. So this might seem common to you, but it's uncommon here. It's not something that I expected to see. All right, you know, I just meant to mention the spiders that were found in Oregon and turn into a whole big thing about ants. That's why you never know where this show is going to go. You really don't. One thing, though, we're not going to be talking about guns tonight because, you know, I've gotten enough feedback from people that are sick of it. I'm sick of it. And, yeah, you know, we can focus on it every single week. There's always something going on. But I've pretty much said how I feel, and I've focused on the news and things like that, and there's so much else going on. I just don't want to lose track of that. You know, I don't want to basically have a lot of stories that are worth pointing some attention to ignored as a result. And there are so many stories worth focusing on. For instance, this story here. Anti-gay groups in Russia have sued Madonna for more than $10 million for moral damage suffered by St. Petersburg residents. That's the capital of Russia. It's a big city. $10 million for moral damage that was suffered during a recent concert in the city. A lawyer representing one of the suing parties says that the attendees of the concert and those who have seen videos of her performance have suffered psychological stress and emotional shock because of her promotion of homosexuality. Wow. If we only knew it was that easy to make the Russians suffer, the whole Cold War wouldn't have been necessary. Could have just sent some gay literature their way and they would have crumbled. Wow. Of course, that would mean that we would have to acknowledge what gay literature was or in the 1950s, but still, that's incredible. To think that redneck culture is alive in St. Petersburg. And what else is happening? There's a lot of crazy news going on. Really kind of bizarre stuff. Like, for instance, South Africa, we had that horrible massacre at the hands of the police of 34... striking miners. And you might have heard this story where 270 of their colleagues of other miners who were striking were charged with murder. The cops opened fire on them and the other striking miners were charged with their deaths. You think the NYPD is out of control? Wow, it can always get worse. It can always get worse. So basically, this goes back to an old apartheid era. In fact, it goes back before then. One of those laws that basically you can charge people with crimes if they're deemed to be somehow culpable for creating the situation where it happened in the first place. So the police aren't charged, and other people who didn't do anything violent are, because if they weren't there, well, then it wouldn't have happened in the first place. You can just keep going forever with this. You can charge the government, because if they weren't there, then there wouldn't be miners there. You can charge God. You could keep going. You just keep going, charging everybody. It's your fault, not my fault. And, well, I heard they dropped the charges. Wow. Welcome to the 15th century. They dropped the charges against the 270 miners. I believe they have still yet to charge the police for opening fire. Now, of course, the police say that they were in fear for their lives because these guys were armed, too. But, you know, looking at this reaction, looking at how they deal with strikers, it sort of explains why they were armed in the first place. So a lot is broken over in South Africa. That's for sure. On someone of a lighter side, a woman who was reported missing while taking a holiday in Iceland joined the search, oblivious to the fact that she was the one that people were searching for. Yeah, she is described as being Asian and speaking fluent. Is this the missing person description or what? Are they still looking for her? That's kind of a weird description to give to somebody who can comment for herself. She is described as being Asian and speaking fluent English. She comes to the name of... No, they don't even give her name. She was deemed missing in Iceland's south on Saturday. The search continued over the weekend. This was actually a week ago. The search continued over the weekend but failed to locate the woman. However, on Monday, the woman realized what had happened and informed police. She said she had changed her clothes when the bus she was on made a stop, but passengers must not have realized it was the same person and reported her missing. The other passengers also failed to realize that a seemingly new person with closely resembled the missing woman had appeared. How could closely resembled was exactly the same? It was the same person. I would hope she would closely resemble herself. They failed to realize another person had appeared on the bus and had, in fact, joined them in the search effort. The woman said she had no idea she was a subject of search efforts and said she, too, had done her best to help find the missing tourist but had failed. Wow. Okay, so if you do anything stupid at all in the next week, look at that story because it can always be topped. There's always somebody there that... No, it's not her fault. I mean, she didn't really do anything wrong. It's just... I guess events line up and people don't pay attention. Yeah, that's what it must be. Sad news, the Reverend Sun Yun-moon has died, 92 years old. Remember Reverend Sun Yun-moon? Yeah, that hasn't been much in the news lately, but we've all heard of Moonies, right? We've people who, Unification Church, all that, they used to be everywhere. In fact, I think they still are everywhere, right? They own the Washington Times and University of Bridgeport and all kinds of things they've taken over. And the New Yorker Hotel. Yeah. Where Nikola Tesla died. Not because of the Moonies, but just those two things happen. You see the building. It's right near Penn Station. People think it's the New Yorker Magazine, but no, the New Yorker Hotel has nothing to do with the New Yorker Magazine, which is not owned by Moonies. But okay, I digress a lot. He was a Korean evangelist, businessman, self-proclaimed messiah. He built a religious movement notable for its mass weddings and all kinds of other craziness. He was an ardent anti-communist. There's a couple of things here I'd like you to pay attention to. Think about North Korea while I'm describing Reverend Sun Yun-moon, all right? And he was from North Korea. He was an ardent anti-communist. He had been imprisoned by the communist authorities in North Korea in the 1940s. He saw the United States as the world's salvation. But in the late 1990s, after financial losses, defections, and stagnant growth in the church's membership, he turned on America, branding it a repository of immorality. He called it Satan's Harvest and repositioned his movement as a crusade for moral values. Now, back in 1982, there was a ceremony involving 2,075 couples at Madison Square Garden. The men wore identical blue suits, the women lace and satin gowns. Mr. Moon was said to have made the matches based on questionnaires, photographs, and the recommendations of church officials. The couples had met only weeks earlier in many cases. They could only speak to each other through an interpreter. Many had to remain separated for several years during church work before they were allowed to even consummate the unions. Think about the way North Korean society is. I see a lot of parallels here. This guy was an anti-communist, was not part of North Korea, but yet was born in that area. And it just seems like there might be something in the culture as far as elevating somebody to godlike status and exaggerating tremendously and doing things in mass numbers. You know, it might be something with the Confucian tradition. I don't know exactly what. I don't know enough about it. But the parallels here strike me. Now, Sun Yun-moon was born on January 6, 1920, in a small town in what is now North Korea. This is according to his official biography, so it's subject to a bit of, stretching of the truth, perhaps. When he was 10, his family joined the Presbyterian Church. When he was a teenager, around Easter of 1935, according to Unification Church lore, Jesus appeared to him and anointed him God's choice to establish the kingdom of heaven on earth. Apparently, Jesus spoke fluent Korean, but I don't think he spoke English. Nothing wrong with that at all. I mean, he should be able to do that, at the very least. A secular education beckoned, and in 1941, Mr. Moon entered Waseda University in Japan, where he studied electrical engineering. Oh, it could have gone a totally different way. Electrical engineering, imagine that. 2 years later, he returned to Korea and married his first wife, Sun Kil Choi, who bore him a son. In 1946, leaving them behind, he moved to Pyongyang, which, of course, is now the capital of North Korea, to found a predecessor of the Unification Church called the Gwangya Church. Bad idea. Bad idea. He was imprisoned by the communist authorities, and he later said they had tortured him. But he was freed in 1950 by United Nations forces, according to his official biography. He was said to have walked 320 miles to Busan on the southern tip of the Korean Peninsula. Walked 320 miles, and it's not a thing. Don't even mention it. There, as the account goes, this is my favorite part, he built a church with United States Army ration boxes and lived in a mountainside shack. He built a church out of ration boxes from the United States Army. Pictures, or it didn't happen? You know, I really would like to see that. I can't believe I just used an internet meme. I'm sorry. One of the more bizarre moments in Mr. Moon's later years came on March 23rd, 2004, at what was described as a peace awards banquet held at the Dirksen Senate Office Building in Washington, D.C. Members of Congress were among the guests, and at one point, Representative Danny K. Davis, an Illinois Democrat just like Obama, wearing white gloves, carried in on a pillow one of two gold crowns, which were placed on the heads of Mr. Moon and his wife. Yeah. I don't know if there was any chanting or processions or things like that, but kind of a weird thing. I wonder if that was on C-SPAN. Some of the members of Congress who attended said they had no idea that Mr. Moon was to be involved in the banquet, though it was hosted by the Interreligious and International Federation for World Peace, which everybody knows is a foundation affiliated with the Unification Church. And here's the icing on the cake. At the banquet, and there probably was icing on the cake there too, at the banquet, Mr. Moon stated that emperors, kings, and presidents had declared to all heaven and earth that Reverend Sun Myung Moon is none other than humanity's savior, Messiah, returning Lord, and true parent. And if that didn't give you pause, I don't think anything else could. So, yeah, a bit grandiose there. A bit. But if it had just gone a different way, if he had become part of Kim Il-sung's cabinet, you know, he could be the leader of North Korea now. Not now, but before he died. Basically, he was able to speak in a certain way, get people to follow him, exaggerate like crazy. So yeah, it's pretty incredible. Something else going on besides the convention. Anybody want to guess what it is? You wouldn't guess in this country probably, because there's virtually no coverage of it. And I'm referring to the Paralympics. This year's Paralympics are expected to draw their largest ever live television audience, except in the United States, where events will receive only minimal coverage and won't be screened as they happen, prompting anger from certain radio talk show hosts and other people as well. Viewers in countries including Brazil, China, Britain, Australia will enjoy several hours of coverage at least per day. U.S. audiences will get 5.5 hours of programming total, and some of it will only air after the 11-day competition in London is over on September 9th. That has led some equality campaigners complaining that Paralympic athletes, who include military veterans, aren't being treated as the equal of their able-bodied teammates. And having watched some international news in the last couple of days, it really is something to see. The track competition alone is simply phenomenal. But other things, well, wheelchair playing tennis games, that was also pretty incredible. And just the whole thing is very inspirational. And we're just not getting it here. Now, several online petitions are seeking to persuade major U.S. networks to screen Paralympic sports amid an apparent surge in interest, fueled by high-profile athletes like South Africa's Oscar Pistorius, who was a double amputee known as the Blade Runner. He also, in fact, competed in the men's 400-meter and 4x400 relay at the Olympics. The International Paralympic Committee predicts that adding together viewers on each of the 11 days of competition, the total audience figure for the London Paralympics will reach 4 billion. It said that 4 years ago in Beijing, a total accumulated audience of around 3.8 billion in 80 countries watched the 2008 Paralympics, including a total of 1.4 billion viewings in China across 11 days, 670 million in Japan, and 439 million in Germany. Now, of course, that means that individual viewers are counted several times, if you do it that way. The London Organizing Committee said deals announced so far with about 90 global broadcasters will provide £10 million, or $16 million in revenue, which is a record for the Paralympics. It's dwarfed, of course, by the scale of broadcasting rights for the Olympics. NBC alone paid $4.38 billion last year to secure its rights for both summer and winter games through 2020. Alongside a predicted increase in interest from television audiences, demand for Paralympic tickets has also soared, with a record 2.2 million seats in London sold so far. And yeah, I know this story comes from last month, so obviously, since it's in progress now, certain things no longer apply. About 8.8 million tickets were sold during the 17-day London Olympics, so that's pretty impressive. Now, in Britain, Channel 4 will show 150 hours of programming, and about 350 hours more online and across three temporary on-demand channels. And we again say that in the United States, we get 5.5 hours. Amazing. The Australian Broadcasting Corporation will screen around 100 hours of coverage, showing events live each day on its main channels, offering a highlight show and on-demand internet service. Many of the global channels screening the Paralympics, including Japan's NHK, China's CCTV, and the Korean Broadcasting Service, are public channels without the same pressures to secure advertising as commercial networks. Others showing the competition are specialist cable sports channels such as Brazil's Globo, which has 11 million subscribers, or Italy's Sky Italia with 5 million paying customers. NBC, which drew 31 million viewers with its coverage of the London Olympics closing ceremony, said it will screen a 90-minute roundup on September 16th. A week after the Paralympics close. In addition, it will screen four 60-minute highlight programs on the NBC Sports Network. Yeah, not even NBC, the NBC Sports Network, which is a cable channel it acquired in 2011. Four 60-minute segments and one 90-minute segment is embarrassing, said Damon Hirota, an IT consultant in Orlando, Florida, who's organized one of several petitions urging major networks to cover events live. The effect on people would be simply amazing, and the barriers it would break down between able-bodied Americans and the disabled would be monumental. NBC insists its coverage represents a major increase from previous years, up from the single 90-minute program it offered from the Beijing Paralympics. It's a disgrace. It really is. But they say that you can see things on YouTube if you look carefully. But wow. I just assumed that it would be covered, because I was hearing all about it and, watching the Olympics or seeing the highlights of the Olympics, at least. I was actually looking more forward to the Paralympics because it just was a lot more interesting and inspirational. And, with so many channels out there, you could broadcast 24 hours a day live everything that's going on over there. There's enough space for it. But no, not a single one. It's really, really pretty sad. All right, we're going to hop into delay because I did say that we'd be taking some phone calls, and I do like to keep my promises. So we're going to have this public service announcement. Well, not public service announcement, but basically a, what do you call it? A A legal ID. Yeah, that's the word. And we'll be back in just a moment. Our phone number, 631-632-9872.
I'm Arianna Huffington. You're listening to Think Out Loud on WUSB Stony Brook.
And we're back. It's getting smoother and smoother, isn't it? 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. The convention is taking place. Did you see this in the news? This was unbelievable. Not really unbelievable, but I guess a wake-up call. Mitt Romney will get absolutely no support from the African-American community, literally. According to an NBC News Wall Street Journal poll, 94% of black voters support President Barack Obama compared to 0% of those same voters who plan to vote for Romney. It's no surprise that a majority of African-American voters plan to stick by the president despite the dismal state of the economy and the high unemployment rate among blacks. But Romney's 0% support comes as a surprise to even the least of skeptics. Considering the small yet significant number of black conservatives, the poll results are quite notable. However, black voters aren't the only voting demographic that may turn out to be a political sore for the Republican hopeful. According to the same poll, the president leads Romney among Latino voters with a 2-to-1 margin. And that's crucial. Obama leads Romney in nearly every important voting bloc, including women and voters under the age of 35. Romney, however, has staved off Obama's momentum among whites, rural voters, and seniors. And I guess there's more of them. That's something. That's significant. I don't know what it says. Does it say that people vote as a race? Does it say that Romney is out of touch? It can say all kinds of weird things. And if you watch the reaction also to the hurricane in Louisiana, Obama's trip to the hurricane zone, which took place 3 days after Mitt Romney's trip down there, underscored the differences in the way the presidential candidates see the role of government. I thought this was particularly telling. So far, the president's remarks about the storm have focused on what money and resources the federal government can marshal to help. And Romney used his trip on Friday to emphasize the need for charitable donations to help people recover. Charitable donations. Aside from drawing a distinction with Romney on the role of government, Obama also signaled the advantages he had over his opponent as a sitting president. The White House publicized how much Obama has done to oversee the storm response. He called governors and mayors, received briefings by weather and security advisors, and declared states of emergency before the storm even hit. And since the storm hit last week, Democrats have been using the disaster issue to hammer Romney and his running mate, Wisconsin Representative Paul Ryan, whose budget had proposed eliminating $10 billion a year in disaster spending and requiring Congress to pay for emergencies by cutting from elsewhere in the budget. Now, as Romney's visit to Louisiana was wrapping up on Friday, Obama was in Texas talking to U.S. troops about the disaster, telling them that as president, he had directed the federal government to keep doing everything that it can to help our partners at the state and local level. As a country, we stand united with our fellow Americans in their hour of need. It was more than Romney had said publicly about the hurricane that very day, even though he had spent more than 3 hours driving down the flooded Jean Lafitte Boulevard, which is a main road, his motorcade inching past flooded gas stations, houses, front lawns. What he said was, I'm here to learn and obviously to draw some attention to what's going on here, so that people around the country know that people down here need help. Yeah, it's not me, it's you. I'm telling you, they need help, so help them. Leave me alone. I'm just the president. And that snippet of conversation represented the bulk of Romney's remarks in Louisiana on Friday. Wow. I mean, he's making it easy, isn't he? Now, a day before Romney arrived, the governor, who was a Republican, by the way, had called on the government and the Army Corps of Engineers to spend more to expand protection for places like Jean Lafitte. Is that the name of a town? That's the name of that road. I guess it's the name of a town, Jean Lafitte, which is outside the protection of the levee system. Romney met a woman who lost her home in the flooding. She told him that Romney said there's assistance out there. He said, go home and call 211, which is a public service number offered in a few states. That was basically what he said. A candidate looking as heartless as somebody in the government that doesn't care. And you have to wonder, you know, charitable donations, what is government for if not to take care of people in times of need like this, when there is a disaster? That's what all the taxes that people are paying should be going for. Okay, Romney, you save all this money, you cut $10 billion, or you save however much you're saving by not covering these expenses. Where is that money going? What do you want to spend on? Military, I suppose, more military actions, the kinds of things that never get cut, the kinds of things that never get touched, not by people like him anyway. All right, again, 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. I'd like to hear people's opinions on the political climate right now in this country and the future. If you're going to watch the convention tonight, tomorrow, or the day after, you only have 3 days. If you're going to vote, if you think it makes a difference, or really anything else that's on your mind, 631-632-9872. Good evening. You are on Off the Wall.
Hi there.
Hi, where are you calling from?
I'm in Coram.
Coram?
Yeah.
Lovely place.
Excuse me?
It's a lovely place, home of the 732 exchange. No, wait. Well, yeah, it's something like that. What's on your mind?
Well, just you talking about the hurricanes and how the two big shots. Anyhow, why aren't they all the donations that are coming to them for their presidency runs, why don't they just take a little bit of money out of their, you know, and fund and help out if they really care?
That's a great idea. All the money that people are donating to the presidential campaigns, take the campaigns themselves should donate a few million bucks to the hurricane victims. That's a great idea.
They're like raising hundreds of millions and stuff. What's a few whatever?
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with you there. Hopefully this will get passed along, and maybe we'll see somebody ignore it at some point.
Anyhow, but that's just my 2 cents. And thank you very much.
All right. Well, thanks for those 2 cents. They were quite valuable. 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. And again, you can call us from anywhere in the world if you're listening live. And by live, I mean right now it's 6:44 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on September the 4th, 2012. And if that jives with what you're experiencing right now, that means, yes, you can pick up the phone and dial country code 1-631-632-9872 and speak to us, speak to the world, speak to history, because we archive the programs too, and they're there forever. Did you see Clint Eastwood's talk? Oh my God, that was unbelievable. His off-color endorsement, they're calling it, of Mitt Romney last Thursday seemed to startle and unsettle the candidate's own top aides, several of whom made a point of distancing themselves from the decision to put him on stage without a polished script. I like the idea of putting people on without a polished script. Yeah, of course, it's something that they live in fear of. But I'll bet they never do it again. They called it strange, weird, theater of the absurd, all kinds of finger-pointing as to whose idea it was in the first place. The campaign also placed Eastwood at the beginning of the television network coverage at 10 p.m., and that meant that a video of Romney's family life didn't get broadcast. They broadcast Clint Eastwood instead. Yeah, that's too bad. Eastwood, the 82 years old, delivered a speech in which he pretended to have a sarcasm-filled conversation with President Obama sitting by his side, represented by an empty chair. I heard it on the radio, and I didn't know what was going on. I just heard him saying, "What do you mean, shut up?" I thought he was talking to hecklers, but he was talking to an empty chair. And the campaign insisted Romney enjoyed the speech, and the holes in the wall were there when he got there. All right. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Hey.
Hi. What's on your mind? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Rocky Point, Long Island.
Oh, great. 744 Exchange.
Yes.
All right. And others, too. We can't see your number. I'm just guessing. What's on your mind?
I don't know. They were just telling me to call and say what's on my mind, and I don't know.
Okay, hold on. Who's they? Who is they? The Unification Church? Republicans? Who? Who's telling you what to do?
there's a lot of groups out there that are telling the youth to get out and vote, but with the whole electoral college system, it seems like there's really no point.
Well, yeah, you know, in New York, we all know it's going to go for Obama no matter what we do.
It doesn't matter what I do. Like, I would vote blue, but, like, it just doesn't seem like there's any purpose for me to waste my time and go and vote.
It's a stupid system, and we say this every 4 years, and that's part of the problem with the country is that we know what the problems are, and we're too lumbering and big to fix them. And that's why you don't see improvement in infrastructure, you don't see new programs taking off and innovation, and you don't see changes to old antiquated systems. And yeah, you're right. That needs to be taken care of. But I do think that, you know, if enough people said it doesn't matter what I do, then it would make a difference, because all of a sudden the numbers would change, and electoral college or not, you'd get some different result.
Yeah.
So, yeah, well, I think keeping the pressure on, that's the way to do it. Just, but if your vote did matter, if it did make a difference, what would you do?
If there was a popular vote, I would love it, because I would go out, I would vote this election, I'd be voting for Obama, but I feel like when I see that total major numbers at the end of the election, I'd feel like that number, that one extra vote I did mattered.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, it does matter on a local level, so...
Yeah, on a local level, of course, but...
So, you know, and
local elections, I see an impact, but like when it comes to like the national elections, I feel insignificant.
Mm-hmm. No, you'd feel insignificant with a couple hundred million people too, just expressing their opinion. But at least it would be majority rule, which, you know, majority rule in some cases is the right way to go. And I think in a popular election, there is no other way to go than voice the majority. Let's hope it changes. You know, it's interesting because on a state level, it's not like that. And whatever reason you have for using it on a national level should apply to the state level as well, but for some reason it doesn't. So it's a completely antiquated system. It needs to go, needs to be changed.
Yeah.
All right, thanks for your call.
You're welcome, man.
All right.
Bye.
631-632-9872. It's interesting, we're getting local calls. Anyone on the internet listening tonight? If you're listening on the internet, why don't you be the person to prove it to us by calling 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. What were we talking about? We were talking about the Clint Eastwood debacle, which was kind of entertaining. In fact, that's what everybody was talking about. It was the same night as Romney's acceptance speech, and everybody was talking about Clint Eastwood. I mean, yeah, whoever set that up really was not thinking, but it was very entertaining. Now, speaking of entertaining, speaking about people doing dumb things, you remember Todd Akin? Okay, this was the guy that decided he was going to talk about how women who are raped have the physical ability to basically not become pregnant and genius things like that. Well, I guess great minds flock together in situations like that, because Karl Rove decided that was an opportunity for him to weigh in and suggest that he be murdered. These people are supposedly smart. You know, they run governments, and they just don't think before they open their mouths. You know, what is going on inside their heads? Republican strategist Karl Rove has apologized to Representative Todd Akin after joking about the Missouri candidate for senator being murdered. I mean, you know, if you're in a bar and, you know, you work down at the refinery or something like that, okay, you know, you can make a joke like that. It's not really going to come back to haunt you. But if you're Karl Rove, you're a Republican strategist, you probably have a piece of Fox News, and who knows, you probably run for office of some sort one day. Why? What do you gain from that? It's amazing. Tells you a lot about their character. Anyway, Akin campaign advisor Rick Tyler said the representative accepted Rove's apology during a phone call on Friday. Bloomberg Businessweek's website had quoted Rove as telling GOP donors in Florida, "We should sink Todd Akin. If he's found mysteriously murdered, don't look for my whereabouts." I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm laughing because it's bizarre how they keep sinking themselves. Rove and other Republicans have urged Aiken to drop his challenge to Democratic Senator Claire McCaskill after Aiken spoke about women's bodies being able to avoid pregnancy in cases of what he called legitimate rape, which is another monumental figure of speech. This is also something interesting, too. We have nobody on the internet. Is the internet working? I'll tell you what. Why don't you just, I won't pick up. If you're listening on the internet and you're too shy to speak on the air, just call us now to tell me that the internet is working, all right? And then I'll see the phones ringing, and I'll wait about a minute, and then I'll pick them up. And that's plenty of time for you to hang up if you're too shy. 631-632-9872. Okay, there were news stories circulating last week about Romney's speech, and this is how they would open. Mitt Romney will urge voters to leave behind their disappointment in President Barack Obama and help him restore the promise of America in a high-stakes convention speech on Thursday in front of the nation. What is needed in our country today is not complicated or profound. It doesn't take a special government commission to tell us what America needs. What America needs is jobs, lots of jobs, Romney will say. It just kind of struck me that, wow, news agency Reuters has really become good at predicting what people are going to say. But it turns out that all these speeches are leaked in advance. Now, you know, doesn't that sort of take away from the sincerity of it all? When you know word for word what it is they're going to be saying in front of that cheering crowd. Personally, I think a true leader would be able to give a speech without holding a speech in front of them. They should be able to speak out of their heads. You know, yeah, you might get some awkward moments, but you either have no listeners on the internet or we're not on the internet because I have not seen a single call come in. So that's a bit strange. It's not unlikely, though. It does happen a lot. But yeah, you know, being able to tell exactly what somebody's going to say is disappointing, to say the least. Has anyone seen Michelle Obama's speech for tonight? I don't know. Has that been leaked? We can read in unison then. Meanwhile, a federal court has ruled against a Texas law that would require voters to present photo IDs to election officials before being allowed to cast ballots in November. That's right. They struck that law down in Texas. Three-judge panel in Washington ruled on Thursday that the law imposes strict, unforgiving burdens on the poor and noted that racial minorities in Texas are more likely to live in poverty. CBS News legal analyst Andrew Cohen reports the law required new forms of voter identification, even for Texas residents who have long voted accurately. The court ruled that the new voter identification law in Texas would have an unconstitutional impact on the right to vote for poor people, and especially Hispanics and African Americans, the same minorities who were protected earlier in the week from Republican redistricting by another federal court panel. I did see those calls come in, so I guess we're just very delayed on the internet. All right, well, we only have a minute left, so if anyone does want to call in, 631-632-9872, and speak now or forever wait till next week. This is the third court ruling in the past 3 days out of the federal courts striking down Republican voter laws. This is the thing, you know, the fact that these are all Republicans trying to do this. It doesn't sound like it's about fairness, does it? Why is it only Republicans are pushing for voter ID laws? Why is that? If it's about making sure that people legitimately are voting, why wouldn't Democrats be interested in that as well? Is there some other agenda at work here? And you know, looking at this, yeah, you have to think there is. You have to think that because otherwise everybody would be saying the same basic things. Unless they stand for completely different values. Yeah, it's pretty weird, isn't it? Anyway, so that's what's going on. The convention is starting. We'll run for the next 3 days. Obama's speech is on Thursday. I don't know if he's going to have a surprise speaker before him with an unscripted... He really should. He should find somebody that's... That's doddering, and you don't know what he's going to say next, and maybe speak to an empty chair, too. and just have some fun with it. I think in many cases, people are measured by their sense of humor. Can you tell when I leave Delay? Because I just left Delay, and I think I sound better. Yeah. Well, the fact that I left Delay means that we can't take any more phone calls. And, of course, the phones always light up when I do that. So I don't know what that even means. But we're out of time. If you want to write to us, though, and we have been getting some very interesting letters, maybe we'll get to them in future weeks, please add your voices to that. You know, anybody can put together some words, even if you're shy. In fact, the shy people sometimes write the most. Our email address is OTW, that stands for Off the Wall, OTW@2600.com, 2600.com. And if it's really interesting or unique, we might even read it on the air. Because we believe in spontaneity. All right. Speaking of spontaneity, maybe you'd like to learn how to write a political poem. And we're going to close with some instructions on how to do that by somebody who knows a thing or two about that, a member of the Providence Poetry Slam community up in Rhode Island, also a rapper by the name of Sage Francis. This is how to write a political poem. Have a good night.
However it starts, it's got to be loud. And then it's got to get a little bit louder. But this is how you write a political poem and how you deliver it with power. Mix current events with platitudes of empowerment. Wrap it up in rhyme or rhyme it up in rap until it sounds cool. Glare until it sinks in. Because somewhere in Florida, votes are still being counted. I said, somewhere in Florida, votes are still being counted. See, that's your hook. You gotta have a hook. More than the look, it's the hook that's the most important part. Hook's gotta fit. Hook's gotta hit. Hook's gotta hit hard in the heart. Because somewhere in Florida, votes are still being counted. And Dick Cheney is peeing all over himself in spasmodic glee. See what I did? Make fun of politicians. It's easy. Especially with Republicans like Rudolph Giuliani, Colin Powell, and Al Gore. Ooh, see what I did? I called Al Gore a Republican. That must mean that my political sensibilities are much more finely tuned than yours. Talk about idiotic juxtapositions of political personalities and ideologies, as if communism really were the opposite of democracy. As if we needed a Ralph Nader, not a Darth Vader. Amazing grace, how... Stop in the middle of a song that everybody knows and loves. This will give your poem a sense of urgency. Because there is always a sense of urgency in a political poem. There is no time to waste. Corruption doesn't have a curfew. Greed doesn't care what color you are. And the New York City Police Department is filled with police officers who carry guns on their hips and metal badges over their hearts. Remember, injustice isn't injustice. It's just in us, just as injustice is just in ice. Yeah! That is the only alien nation of this alien nation where you either fight for free, dumb, or else you are free but dumb. Here in Freeborn Hall, where you are born free or free born and born and free. Yeah! And somewhere in Florida, votes are still being counted. And it makes me wanna I have seen devastation of gentrification, and I can talk with great articulation about cosmic constellations and atomic radiation. I saw D.W. Griffith's Birth of a Nation, but I prefer Disney's 102 Dalmatians. And like a cross-examination, I can give you the explanation of why films like Slam Nation are the ultimate manifestation of poetical ejaculation and egotistical manipulation and other things that rhyme like Asian with Haitian and this nation. And maybe it's true that they are still counting votes in Florida, but at the end of a political poem, that just doesn't matter anymore, because all you have to do to end a political poem is get real quiet, close your eyes, and end by saying the same line three times, the same line three times, the same line three times. Thank you.
man, oh man, it is Tuesday night, September 4th. You're listening to WUSB. Stony Brook, it's a minute or two after 7 o'clock. Tomorrow, school begins. We're going to play some back-to-school tunes tonight. Stay tuned. It might get crazy, but you're ready for that. Tune in, turn on, and drop out.
Principal Doug.
How's it going, eh?
Okay, so good day, welcome to school, and today we're not going to have the national anthem or the Lord's Prayer. Instead, we're going to have our theme.
Okay, everyone ready? Will you sing with me, standing in unison?
Okay, be seated.
We have a long day ahead of us, so we should begin with a 2-hour recess. Everyone get up and go out.
Go outside.
Good day.
Okay, there'll be smokes handed out outside. This isn't a fire drill. No lining up, just run out. Okay, light up. Oh, if they're outside, they can't hear us, eh?
Oh, well, then we'll light up.
Okay.
No, everyone go out except the people in the third seat of every row. You all have a detention.
Why? What'd they do?
I have to talk to them all in my office.
You
so
can't...
So come to the vice principal's office and we'll have a beer and talk. You've been bad.
You can't do that. You have to have a reason.
I don't. If I'm vice principal, my vice principal never had any reason,
okay,
so
this,
I don't need any.
This, what? Really?
Okay, so, that's the announcement.
Except one thing, when you go in the lunchroom, what you're smelling is food, and that thing is a burger. Okay, go ahead.
Good day. End of announcements.
Have a good school day. You want everybody to stand up again?
All right.
Stand up again for the end.
And sing in unison.
Beauty. Everyone say, beauty.
Yeah, that's more like a little rock and roll high school, baby.
Yeah. Well, the reading and the writing and arithmetic never did get through to me. It ain't because I'm square or thick, 'cause I learned my ABCs. But when I graduated from the grammar school and I moved one grade above, I began to be a snook at books, but I made straight A's in love. Now the teacher would say to learn your algebra, but I'd bring home C's and D's. How could I make an A when there's a swinging maid on the left and on the right and in the back and the front of me? Oh, my grades are low, oh, my card I know, but they ought to give me one above. If they'd give me a mark for learning in the dark, I'd have straight A's in love. My senior year with graduation year, I did my homework every night. And when my mama said I ought to go to bed, I turned out all the lights. But my sweetie pie was waiting right outside. She'd be a-cooing like a dove. Though I did my best, I failed semester tests, but I made straight A's in love. Now the teacher would say to learn your algebra, but I'd bring home C's and D's. How could I make an A when there's a swinging maid on the left and on the right and in the back and the front of me? Oh, my grades are low, oh, my card I know, but they ought to give me one above. If they'd give me a mark for learning in the dark, I'd have straight A's in love.